Welcome to the Healthy ADHD Podcast. Same podcast, different name. I am your host, Liz Lewis. And like I said before, I do not want to host another boring podcast. If you look on iTunes, there are a gazillion podcasts about ADHD. I'm totally serious. You should check. Look, I just don't want to do the same thing that everybody else is doing. The Healthy ADHD Podcast
is your place to get the best information and hear from the best experts in the field of ADHD. I take all this information and I make it understandable, actionable, and hopefully a little fun. It does not suck.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to another edition of the Healthy ADHD Podcast. I am your host, Liz Lewis, and I have a special guest for you today. I reached out to Dr. Marcy Caldwell a month or so ago. Dr. Caldwell actually came on my radar because she is speaking at the conference in November, and I love the description of what she's talking about because she's going to talk about parenting with ADHD. Most people that come to the conference are coming to learn about parenting for ADHD, and she is the one and only person I've seen willing to talk about parenting with ADHD. So I got all excited and I reached out to her. Let me just read you her bio. Dr. Caldwell is the director and supervising psychologist at Rittenhouse Psychological Assessments. She's a licensed clinical psychologist who's been specializing in the treatment and assessment of ADHD and learning disabilities for over 15 years. She's the former senior assessment supervisor at Tettelman Counseling Services at Temple University, and a lecturing professor at the University of Pennsylvania. In addition to her private practice, she works at Villanova University, Seabrook House, the Temenos Center, and the J.J. Peters Institute. Rittenhouse Psychological Services is a boutique practice focused on helping adults with ADHD thrive, and it's awesome. It's fantastic, and I will link to her practice in the show notes because I'm fancy like that, of course. So without further ado, please listen in on my discussion with Dr. Marcy Caldwell. Welcome to the show, Dr. Marcy Caldwell.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I think we're almost neighbors. I mean, neighbors within driving distance.
Where do you live?
I live in York, Central Pennsylvania.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. And it's always good to see that there is, I'm going to say, specialists fairly close, because here in Central PA, there's almost nothing.
Well, unfortunately, even in Philadelphia, there's very little.
Even now?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, here I was thinking it was like a hotbed of good.
Yeah, you would think so, right? No, it's pretty much me and the Penn Adult ADHD Center, which has, you know, like a 6-month wait list.
Is that really what it is?
Yeah, like they don't even have a schedule that goes out far enough to schedule people. They just tell people to call back, which,
okay,
you know, in ADHD.
All right. Well, that probably doesn't work.
Yeah.
Okay, so I will not be pursuing that. Okay.
They're wonderful over there. I'm not dissing them.
Oh, yeah.
They have a long wait list because they're wonderful.
Yeah. I buy all of J. Russell Ramsey and Anthony Rothstein's books because I like them.
Yeah.
And I've had thoughts of like, oh, wouldn't it be cool to drive into Philly and do this? But yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I got really excited because I was creeping around on the conference website and I saw that you were going to talk about parenting with ADHD.
Yep.
Okay, before we get to that, what is your relationship to ADHD?
So my relationship is multifold. One is that I am a neurotypical person. However, I specialize in ADHD therapy. And so partly because of this lack of treatment providers in Philadelphia to service the ADHD community, I'm developing kind of a group practice for ADHD and trying to train people because we just need more people. So I have a small group practice that specializes in the treatment of ADHD for adults. I also have a husband with ADHD. So, you know, I have two kids, so who knows how that's going to land, but they're little enough that we don't, we'll see how that plays out, but there's possibility there too.
Just out of curiosity, I don't know if I've ever asked anyone this question. Mm-hmm. How do you get any kind of specialization in ADHD?
Yeah, so I kind of came to it a little circuitously. I used to specialize in psychoeducational assessment, and I worked in college counseling. So I saw a lot of ADHD folks because of that. And then as I was doing kind of feedback with people, I would often suggest therapy, and they would say, oh, well, I'm with you. Can I just stick around? I'm comfortable with you. And there weren't that many referrals to give to people. So I ended up kind of seeking out additional training because I ended up with a bunch of people who had ADHD, and it seemed to kind of just work well with my brain and my personality. I like to kind of get hands-on. I love to get, you know, people's planners out and help them with the more like coaching side of things. I like to get very practical and hands-on and solutions focused. So it just worked well for me. And so the more I did it, the more I enjoyed it.
That's really good, because I feel like a lot of, well, in my community, like a lot of the psychologists and the psychiatrists, actually, they know what it is. Mm-hmm. Nobody has ever questioned the validity of it, the diagnosis. It's more just like, they just don't really, it's not even on the radar. It's kind of, you know. Yeah, when I contacted our local mental health, because I wanted to, you know, they were looking to give away scholarships, like one day passes to the conference. When mm-hmm. I called the county mental health, a friend gave me a number to call. When I called, they were kind of like, well, we have parenting classes, but they're court mandated. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not really dealing with ADHD. And I wanted to say, and I didn't say it, I wanted to say half of the people that need the classes probably have ADHD. I was like, mm-hmm. you know, but it just isn't on people's radar.
Yeah, it's really not. It's on people's radar for, you know, 7-year-old boys. And you know, and it's getting better, definitely. There's definitely more resources and more discussion around adults with ADHD, but in terms of kind of the general population, it's nowhere near where it needs to be.
I agree.
Yeah.
Especially because I'm looking to drive to Philly. I'm like, I should find a therapist in Philly and drive there once a month. Yeah, I don't. Yeah. Okay. So tell me about your hands-on approach. I did creep around on your website. That's what I do. I cyber stalk all of my people. That's wonderful. What I do. And I see that you there was a whole article I read. I got to find it, but it was about women. Mm-hmm. And that's my dog.
Hi, dog.
So I saw, I don't know where it was, I saw in this article that you were talking a little bit about, and I write primarily for women, but we can talk about men too, about some of the, you were saying you're very hands-on. How do we take a person who has all the history, you know, all the comorbidity stuff, and like, how do we start?
Yeah, so I find that oftentimes when people come to me with ADHD, you know, what's bothering them, what's kind of making them frantic enough that they walk through the door is life management, right? Life is feeling out of control, they're dropping too many balls, and of course, there's an emotional component to that, right? Like if you drop a whole lot of balls, you're going to feel bad about yourself. And it's going to trigger all the other times that you dropped balls in your life. And so, you know, there's this wall of shame that comes with it that then makes it even harder to keep your balls in the air. But I often find that dealing with the balls in the air is my first step. You know, that helping people with the life management, with those practical strategies to try to ease the chaos is my entry point, because A, it eases the chaos, and B, it also, when we do that, when we start to work on let's say time management or you know, working with a planner, what happens is all of the history of the failure with planners, right? You know, I get a lot of tears around just opening up a planner because they look, people look at it and they see all the times that they've tried in the past, all the times that they got all excited because this was the planner that was going to do it for them. And, you know, and it worked for 3 days and then they never picked it up again. And it just sat there taunting them. And so the emotional, you know, the emotional stuff comes along with it. But I think with ADHD, you can't do just one. You know, if we just talk about the failures with time management, shame with procrastination, you know, that's great. Maybe we can ease some of that, but it's not going to help with the practical strategies that actually make procrastination better, you know? So I really think that it needs to be twofold. I don't think that you can do just one for most people.
I'm so glad you said that, because one of my things I'm always saying to people is, I have all the respect for coaches, but what I'm always telling people is, you know, that practical stuff, like the skills, the scaffolding of specific skills, and that's really great. But I feel like if you don't deal with some of the emotional stuff, and I saw that you have a CBT sort of focus, I do feel like if you don't deal with all that other stuff, all that structure and support during your coaching, as soon as your time with the coach is over,
it's
over.
Yeah,
definitely. And I think you're one of the only people I know that are trying to address both simultaneously. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think there are some other ones. I know you talked to Ari. And, you know, he does the same thing kind of.
I'm sure he does. Yes.
but yeah, I mean, I think it's really essential. And I think, you know, coaches do great work, but that other side needs to be done at the same time. And, you know, and sometimes when there's not a therapist that specializes in ADHD, maybe it can be outsourced among two people. It can also be really useful to do it in the same room.
Yeah. And that's really great, I think, for the people.
Yeah.
So you said that your husband has ADHD. Mm-hmm. Now the whole parenting thing. Well, let's just talk about men first, because that's not familiar to me in the same way. So, I mean, in your day-to-day life, knowing everything that you know, what do you see here as some of the challenges?
Yeah. So, you know, I think like parenting is hard, right? And there's a lot. When we're talking about balls in the air, like the minute you have kids, you just put 20 to 100 more balls per kid. And so the juggling is hard for any parent. But when you add ADHD onto it, it's just like, how the hell am I supposed to keep these all in the air? And I, as a neurotypical, struggle with it. And so, you know, when I see my clients that have ADHD, or when I see my husband struggle with it, I'm like, I can only imagine. Because it's just, there's so many pieces, there's so many moving parts, you know, the lunches, the permission slips, the shoes under the couch, you know, like there are just so many things to keep track of, and the ADHD brain's not great at that. So that's part of it. So part of it is that life management, keeping the balls in the air stuff. Another part of it is the distraction management. Right. So the life management can lead to some family disorganization and kind of family chaos. And family chaos, you know, often then leads to some emotional, you know, it makes people irritable, right? And more snippy with each other. So it can lead to families, you know, just having a less kind of positive interactions. And that can be just based on this kind of, you know, disorganization at the base of it. So that's part of it. The other part that I see is distraction getting in the way of connection and getting in the way of, you know, boundary setting and, you know, being consistent. So, you know, on the connection part, we have, you know, just our phones and our screens and life being distracting, and being that much more distracting and that much more appealing to the ADHD brain, who can, you know, go off on it that much more quickly, and keeping you away from the goal, right? You know, like as parents, our kids are the most important things to us, right? Most of the time. And we want to be spending time with them. We want to have that one-on-one. We want that FaceTime. But a ding on a phone, you know, draws you away in that moment. We have this habitual connection to pick it up and have that reward, that little dopamine rush that we get when we get to then know what it was that dinged, right? And so the ADHD brain has a really hard time not going to that reward. And it takes us away from the goal of connecting with our kids. And when you're not connected, then you're not seeing the little emotional cues, you know, the things that you need to be on top of in order to kind of parent in the way that people want to be parenting.
You keep saying things that I'm like, that are like perfect, because one of my, and people get mad at me when I say this, especially people whose business is all like social media based. Mm-hmm. I keep saying to people, for ADHD, social media is the worst. Mm-hmm. Like, we already have this issue. And then the dinging and the sounds, and everybody's like, I can't message you. Cause I have, I took Messenger, like in, what is it? Facebook Messenger off my phone. And everyone's like, I can't message you now. And I was like, listen, I have my own issues. I was
like, I can't contact me.
Yeah. And it's just, in particular for the ADHD brain, the dinging and the little number, like if people message you, that little thing that pops up on your phone, even if it's silent.
Yeah.
For us, that is twice as distracting as the average person.
Yeah.
I think you're right. And the other, for me, especially when it comes to connecting with my son, mm-hmm. my big issue is, if the day hasn't gone well, if I forgot my meds, or if I just had a day where I was running in circles and I didn't get whatever I thought in my head, if I didn't get it done, it's even harder because I'm not satisfied. Like, I'm feeling very antsy. Like, I didn't do all the things that I wanted to do. And then I have an even harder time mm-hmm. sitting with him and doing it because my brain is just ping-ponging around.
Right, circling all the things that you haven't done.
Yes.
And so to be present is just so hard.
Yes. Do you think, and this is something that came up after my son was born, do you think a lot of people either seek treatment or go back to treatment who ignored it for a while after they have kids?
Yeah, okay. I do. I think that's true for ADHD and non-ADHD, right? That when we have kids, our own issues become amplified. It's similar in romantic relationships. That's another kind of crux that happens, right? You know, that you get in a serious romantic relationship and you're like, oh, now my issues are being reflected to me in one way or another. But then it happens again when we have kids, you know, that relationships are where we grow. They're what push us to grow. And also what pushes us to see the areas we need to grow. and so, you know, and again, it goes back to this, like, our kids are often the most important thing to us. And so we want to do it as best as we can. And so any small or not so small area that we feel like we're not doing as well as we want to do, we want to address. And so, yeah, a lot of people come back for that reason.
Well, and I swear I saw this on your website. And I've talked about this before. Women, we tend to, a lot of the time, especially like I did this in my 20s, I sort of became overly controlling and I sort of overplanned and overstructured, and it worked. Like mm-hmm. it kept me in line in my 20s. And then when I got married and had my son, I think during the whole pregnancy, I thought I could just overplan that too. Like mm-hmm. my whole parenting thing. And I was diagnosed as a kid. So I was aware of the ADHD stuff, but in my mind, it was like, I'll just like be really like scheduled with this too. Just like I wasn't like, you know, for the last 10 years, and it epically backfired on me to think that I could just be super rigid and that would work once my son was born.
My husband had a sit down with me when my oldest was like 6 months old and was like, listen, you gotta let up because the schedules and, you know, like if he has 2 ounces less of, you know, his milk today, like he's going to be okay. You gotta chill out.
Yep. Yeah. And I even thought quitting my job at the time would help. Like mm-hmm. I thought that if I quit my job, then I could better focus on creating a system, like a structure to the day for the baby and I, right? So I quit my job and it's even worse.
Oh no. Yeah. Well, yeah. It took all your structure away.
Yes. Yeah. And I struggle with structure even on the weekends. I'm irritable because there's no
structure to keep you in place.
Yeah. For the day. And I can't fly by the seat of my pants. I don't have that wonderful ADHD trait where I do fun, not, I don't want to say impulsive, but like spur of the moment, like inspired action. I don't do that. I'm more like the nervous, like mm-hmm. all the time. Okay. So I'm not the only one then that after you have a child or two, you're just like, I obviously need to go back to treating this ADHD thing.
Yeah, definitely not. And okay. And it you know, it makes a lot of sense on an emotional front, but it also makes a lot of sense on a practical front, right? Like you just now have so much more to do. And you have so many more things to take care of and so many more things to remember. And so it's just gonna tax your system, you know, tenfold. And so even just on a very practical level, it makes a lot of sense that as you have kids, if you had it managed before, if you add in, you know, this whole new world and this whole new level of responsibility, that you're then gonna feel at a loss.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and then is there any research into this, into how ADHD actually impacts our ability to be the parents we want to be?
You mean why it does, or in what way does it?
Well, maybe both. I don't know. But so there is research into this.
There's a tiny bit of research.
Okay.
So if you look at kind of a general lit search over the past 10 years, I did this for my presentation, there are fewer than 50 articles on parenting with ADHD. There are, I think it was 18,000 articles on parenting kids with ADHD.
Yes.
Yeah, the focus just hasn't been here yet. And which kind of makes sense if you think about the trajectory of how research in ADHD has gone, right? Like we went from 7-year-old boys to, maybe it can last longer than that, but it's still focused mostly on men. Now we're starting to kind of build out, women can have this too, and maybe it looks a little different. And let's be honest, we don't normally talk about parenting until we start talking about women. And so that this would just start to maybe trickle in now makes sense in terms of that progression. But
that makes me feel better because when I started my website initially, that was my whole thing. I was like, I want to talk about trying to be a mom, like trying to be a mom with ADHD, not just for ADHD. And it was so hard even to explain to people because I'm a researcher by nature and I could not find.
It's really hard.
You know, I even went to my friends at the local college in the psych department and I was like, can you look in like the JSTOR for me? Like I need to find something. And they were like, well, I mean, you're welcome to come into my office and get on the, you know, I just couldn't find anything.
Yeah. It just, it doesn't exist to any large degree and we need to figure out better terminology. Like I had to talk with the people at CHAD several times to make it very clear. Like this is about adults with ADHD who have children. I am not talking about parenting children with ADHD. I mean, I do sort of address that because parenting kids with ADHD, if you have ADHD, is a slightly different beast than parenting normal neurotypical kids. But it's not, you know, the phraseology is even difficult.
Well, if you decide to do a study of some kind, I have ADHD, my son is Asperger's.
Ah.
So that might be fun for you. No. Well, and I also saw in your presentation, now they put like, you know, 2 sentence descriptions in these things, but I did see, it said, the combination can be brutal, but can also come with some distinct advantages. What are the advantages?
Yeah, so that's actually what I was talking about with the difference when there's a match between a neuroatypical parent and a neuroatypical kid, that there can be some advantages. That we actually, the limited research that we do have has shown that there is better attunement between parent and child and more effective parenting strategies. That I think the neuroatypical parent is more able to understand the neuroatypical kid and kind of see those early warning signs in a way that a neurotypical parent might not, because it doesn't translate exactly the same way. So, you know, when we're in tune, when we understand at kind of a gut level what's going on with the person in front of us, we're more able to respond in a way, you know, that feels empathic, that feels connected, that, you know, is more likely to lower any kind of, you know, big, strong emotional reaction. We're more able to respond efficiently and effectively. So when there's a match between parent and child, the parent's more able to do that.
Yeah, I would say I am able to interpret what's going on most of the time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, or like in the evenings when my medication wears off, mm-hmm. I can be a lot more just quick to be frustrated with him, because he isn't always the best communicator, as you can imagine with Asperger's. Mm-hmm. They do tell me he has ADHD too, and they called him impulsive presentation, which I was kind of like, I don't know. He doesn't come off as impulsive to me, but that's what they wrote on the forms. There are, I have support though. Mm-hmm. And I think that probably makes a huge difference, because of my background knowledge, when he was really little, I was kind of like, yeah, like I kind of knew what was coming. I knew he had some sensory stuff that I noticed right when he was born, like in the hospital. It was so obvious. So my level of awareness, I think, pushed us down a certain path, but I did have to explain a lot of stuff to my husband, you know, mm-hmm. that I thought I saw. And then I had support. Like I was able to get the evaluations I wanted. I was able to get in-house behavioral therapy, which I know is not an option for a lot of people.
Yep.
So I've had a lot of support. But I would say without that support, I would probably be a basket case, like most of the time.
Yeah. So when we look at this research, we're looking at parents who have diagnosed ADHD, right? And so they already have some knowledge around the disorder. They're similar to you in that they do have the support. And one of the other findings that we find is that there's actually better educational outcomes for kids with ADHD who have parents with ADHD. And part of that is the like, oh, I wish I had X, or, oh, I had X and that was really helpful. You know, that there's a greater push for advocacy because a parent with ADHD understands that struggle better. And is less likely to say, oh, he's just a kid, or, you know, kind of brush it off as like, you know, everybody says everybody has that nowadays sort of thing. Somebody who actually has struggled with it themselves is going to take it more seriously and is going to be more likely to advocate.
Yeah. And it's funny. I'm more willing to have the conversations with the school too, because I go to them. Like I went to them in kindergarten. Yeah. And told them that they wouldn't test him till kindergarten here in York. They would not test him. But I had my suspicions and I thought I knew, and I already was on top of it. And I went to them with mm-hmm. all the information and said, this is what I know. I was like, you don't have to do anything, but this is what I know. Right. And I remember in first grade, the principal actually said to me, I can like talk to you. He's like, the problem we're dealing with is families who we can't even start the discussion. Like right. Get the ball rolling with the school psychologist or anything. And so I think you're right. I think that probably helps, because I will talk to the school psychologist, mm-hmm. you know, and we'll have conversations about it. So yes, I think his outcome probably will be different. Mm-hmm. And I happen to know people right in my neighborhood whose kids are having some, usually it's behavioral, right? The school always notices the behavior first.
Yep.
I do know that I have some people right around me who are sort of like they just don't, it's almost like they don't want to label their kid.
Exactly.
And my whole thing is, why not intervene early so that they have a better chance of being successful? Mm-hmm. And as you said about the outcomes are better when we start earlier.
Exactly. Yeah. I can't tell you how many people I've seen in my office for an evaluation who are like, yeah, you know, people told my parents all along that I should be tested or that I should get on medication. And they didn't want to, cause they didn't want to label me, you know, they didn't think that that would be good for me. And I don't see as many people who got labeled early on and got the support because, you know, they have then learned a lot of the strategies and they're holding less guilt normally. Because they have an explanation for why these things are an issue, as opposed to where we all go whenever anything's kind of awry, is there something inherently wrong with me? Not wrong with, you know, my brain and my neurochemistry, but something wrong with me as a person. And that's when we get to, you know, kind of deeper psychological issues that have significant ramifications.
Yeah. Well, and then people land in your office.
Exactly.
You know, when it's untreated for years and years, yep. Sort of that emotional impact, especially when it was undiagnosed as well, you know,
yep.
You go into an adulthood, then you become a parent and the demands increase. And it's just no wonder so many people have a meltdown like I did after their kids were born.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So what do you think first steps, like if someone is coming for help and they mm-hmm. know they need an evaluation, what do you think their first step should be if they recognize there's something going on?
Are we talking about parent specific or just in general?
Maybe in general.
So if they know something's going on, but they haven't received a diagnosis, and they need a diagnostic evaluation, because the truth is, you know, inattentive symptoms, hyperactive symptoms, they can be the result of other things. So we want to make sure that we're treating the right thing. And so a really thorough evaluation. And, you know, normally I recommend a interview-based diagnostic evaluation, unless you're in school and you need a full neuropsych comprehensive evaluation. But getting a thorough understanding, getting kind of a lay of the land of where somebody stands in terms of their functional living, you know, what is out of sorts. And then really finding somebody who can help. And, you know, in some communities, that is a therapist who can do both kind of the practical and the skills training. Psychiatry, definitely, you know, ADHD is one of the most well-medicated neurological conditions we have, and it's a relatively easy, straightforward shot, so, and most people tolerate it pretty well, so, you know, I'm a big advocate for medication. It's not tolerated for everybody, so I completely understand when people can't do it, but I think it's usually worth a shot for most people. But I also think that, you know, the self-care is kind of the third major component, right? So there's medication, which is key. There's therapy and skills, which is also key. But there's also self-care, which is key. And granted, made harder when you have ADHD, but also more important when you have ADHD, you know, that you're getting enough sleep, that you're eating a healthy, balanced, evenly blood sugar distributing meals throughout the day, even if your medication has killed your appetite, that you're exercising frequently and intensely. And if you can have some meditation in there too, all the better, right? You know, that is the third and very important pillar of this whole structure.
Yeah, and it's probably something we're not discussing nearly enough.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's really easy to kind of pass off as like, it's funny because in my slides for the Chad talk, I actually put it first because I feel like oftentimes people are like, oh yeah, and you should do the self-care thing. Make sure you get enough sleep and eat well. But it's crucial. I mean, it's and exercise is crucial. You know, the way that we can flood our brains with neurotransmitters that just turn it on in the same way that amphetamines turn it on, right? That we can get our brains activated, and actually because of the plasticity of our brains, we can develop new receptors and actually change the way our brains work. But you have to do it consistently, which the ADHD brain is not that great at.
Yes. And it's funny because people have asked me for a couple of years why I always use healthy ADHD, like for social media, like handle and everything. And I always say, because I've always looked at ADHD as like a larger personal health issue. Mm-hmm. Like it's not just this, you know, hyper-focus and or inability to focus. Like it's not just that. There's a whole lifestyle.
Right.
Factor that you need to consider. And then Barkley did his keynote last year. Did you come to the conference last year?
Yeah.
I was being such a weirdo taking pictures of him and taking pictures of the screen. Like when he was really close to me at one point, I like took a picture of him and I was like, he's going to have me arrested. But anyway, he talked about this stuff, you know, and it really is a public health issue.
It's a public health issue.
Almost all the people I work with don't have the best self-care. They're not eating really well. They're not sleeping really well. They're not taking care of themselves.
Yeah.
And it's just not, I just wish everybody would wake up to that.
Yeah. A little bit. And I mean, you know, it's shown over and over in the research that you're more at risk for diabetes, type 2 diabetes, if you have ADHD, you know, because you're more likely to consume sugar for a variety of reasons, right? You're more likely to have a diet that is unhealthy, partly because of impulsivity, partly because of this kind of draw for a dopamine rush, right? You're also, you know, more likely to have sleep disorders if you have ADHD. You know, that all of these self-care things are seen in the literature pretty thoroughly. But yeah, we continue to not talk about it enough.
Well, and then I have people that'll say, well, I tried the medication for a day or two. I mm-hmm. tried the medication and it didn't really fix it. Like it didn't really. And I'm always like, first of all, we're not fixing. We're not fixing. But, and people with ADHD, we want immediate results, right? Yeah. So you take a pill for a couple of days and you try it out and you're not having terrible side effects or anything, but in your mind, your whole life hasn't changed, right? So it must not be working.
Right.
So why bother get up and work out in the morning, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the hard things about ADHD is like the stuff that would help us to feel better is like, it's really hard for us to be consistent about any of it.
Yeah. It is definitely probably the hardest thing with ADHD, right? Because it is the thing with ADHD, it's the knowing, it's the doing what you know, again, back to Russell Barkley, is you know what to do, but you can't do it, or at least you can't do it consistently or when you're supposed to do it. Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
And if you could, it wouldn't be a disorder.
Yeah. Even forming the good habits is so difficult.
Mm-hmm.
It took me probably 2 years of consistently seeing the same trainer every week to make it a real habit.
Yep.
And having the accountability of her waiting for me, you know,
yeah.
That really kind of, for me, that helps. Well, okay. So to end it, tell me about your presentation. You don't have to give it all away, but, tell me about your presentation in Philadelphia, which is so fun, in Philadelphia this year.
So we're going to be talking about kind of the from the literature that does exist, the main findings in terms of the impact of ADHD on parenting, we're looking at kind of the two main domains of parenting, the control domain, so the, you know, the limit setting, the rules, the boundaries, that part of parenting, and then also the emotional responsiveness part, so the connecting, you know, the understanding, feeling heard, feeling loved. And the way ADHD impacts both of those domains. And then we're going to spend the vast majority of the time really talking about kind of five pillars of ways to handle those findings, those issues that come up. So we're going to be talking about self-care. We're going to be talking about routines and habits within families. We're going to be talking about building communication and healthy communication, and how that can really help address both the emotional components of ADHD parenting, as well as the control side, you know, as well as kind of having well understood limits and boundaries, and having these things very clearly identified. When we talk about emotional management and distraction management as well. So we're going to be addressing kind of those as the five pillars of understanding and working with parents who have ADHD and helping them kind of build better lives and be the parents that they want to be.
Exactly. I'm really excited just because, like I said, for 4 years now, I've been looking for this kind of information. And I feel like I want to talk about it and I want to start the conversation, but I never know who to do it with or where. Or, yeah. And I don't have a PhD, so it's harder for me to have a lot of credibility. So.
But you are a mom, which kind of gives you your own PhD in and of itself, because it's a lot of hard work.
Well, I can write from experience.
A lot of on-the-job training.
And talk about it through experience, yeah. Okay, so where can everybody find you?
So I have two websites. I have my own personal website, drmarcycaldwell.com. The group practice that I have is Rittenhouse Psychological Services. So we're at rittenhousepsych.com. Yeah, those are probably the two best ways to find me.
I think that's how I found you. I think I sent a random email into your like patient portal thing. It was like, so I have this podcast. Yeah, that's what I did. I'm very awkward like that.
That's okay. It was great. I'm also at the, I'm going to be at the, speaking at the Bucksmont Chad meeting this month on the 15th, October 15th. And then I'll be at the National Chad in November.
You know, we don't even have a Chad here in Central PA. I was like, really? For the whole capital region, there's nothing in the middle. What?
The Philadelphia one just started.
Yeah.
Make you feel any better.
It's so strange to me because I know there are people struggling and I can't figure out if they don't know what the problem is or if they're just in denial. Like, I really can't. I can't figure out because I know people that are struggling. Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, this was lovely.
Have you ever done a podcast before?
I have not. You're my first.
Well, like I said, I like to bring on interesting guests, but also like experts that know what they're talking about. It's important to me to have good information. There's a lot of bad information. So.
Yeah. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
So as you can tell, Dr. Caldwell is just a nice human, but she's also a wealth of information. And she's the first person I've gotten to talk to about the parenting with ADHD issue so openly. And if you are, you know, in the Philadelphia area around the time of the conference, I highly suggest you come and listen to her talk because it is really relevant to a lot of us that are struggling, in particular, the whole self-care issue. We are not good at that. And I'm really glad that she is talking about it. I like her approach. I like her vibe. Anyway, I just like her. She's really cool. So if you are a mom with ADHD, you're struggling, you don't have a lot of support in your community, check out my Enclave group. It's private. We have a combination of live meetings and then some people that are camera shy just post in the feed. But we pride ourselves on good information and being kind to one another. It is a great environment. Stick around. I have a bunch of very practical podcasts coming in the next couple weeks, all about home management and cleaning, which is blah, but it seems like a subject that everybody wants me to talk about based on my inbox. Keep moving forward, don't look back. And like I always say, we are stronger together.